Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. Sitting next to me, giggling at me, messing up the introduction, is Juliana. Say hello.
Hello, everyone.
And it's so good to be back. I was traveling for 7 weeks or something.
Almost.
Did we do a podcast on via Skype? I can't remember
if we did it. Yes, we actually made a podcast.
No, we did actually, because I remember...
The podcast?
Yeah, we did do a podcast with Skype, because I remember getting your inset, your little picture, and making this a fake window. I can't remember what we reviewed, but we both read a book.
We did review a book, and also we did the snippet for...
Reading Envy. Yeah, yes. For the Reading Envy podcast. Anyway, today I got back from a trip, 7 weeks away, including 4 weeks with two different trips to Antarctica, and then yesterday a 14-hour flight, and 3 flights the day before, and then another flight today. Anyway, I just got home today, and I'm a bit jet lagged. It's really nice to be home.
Yeah,
you were saying it's really nice for me to be home.
Yeah, it's just nice, you know, when I'm not just... It's just like when I'm home, or when I was home the whole time, I just didn't talk.
Yeah,
it feels after a certain time, it just feels weird.
Yeah,
and sometimes I don't go out anywhere. I don't have.
So it's
a
like you're living
job.
By yourself,
and then. It happened in those weeks that I spent a day without talking to anyone.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. Well,
and,
I was trying to be sociable.
Quite sad.
Working on some cruise ships.
I did try to, but sometimes, you know, sometimes it just doesn't work out. And then...
Yeah. But it's good to be home. Now we can talk. And we've talked already about different things. We're like, oh, what about this? We booked some tickets to go and see Star Wars tomorrow as well, because you didn't see Star Wars.
I didn't see it.
I saw it with Spanish subtitles when I was in Peru for a week, which was good fun. We're now sitting on the couch, so if there's some audio issues... Sorry about that. Oh, and we just ate burritos and I just burped. Excuse me. Right, let's get to today's book, which... yes. Oh, that does smell, doesn't it? It's okay. It's good. We both read while we were away. I actually listened to it as an audiobook, and you read the ebook,
yes.
Artemis by Andy Weir. Now, we listened to the audiobook of The Martian by Andy Weir. Like, it was like 4 years ago or something, maybe a bit longer than that. It feels like quite a long time ago.
Yeah.
And it was around about this time of year, because I remember we were going to the Pass Out Juggling Convention, and it was on the way there and on the way back that we listened to it.
Yeah.
So, again, it was like January, December into January, a few years ago. Anyway... So his second book, like, he could have cashed in. He had like a major movie, award-winning Matt Damon starring Ridley Scott directed movie made of his first book. And it would have been the perfect thing to, as that book came out, be like, have a follow-up book ready to go straight away. But he didn't, because he obviously wanted to spend as much time on his second book as he did on his first book. There's a lot of engineering, technical research going into this.
Oh, yeah, very, very nice.
How much would you bet that Andy Weir learned how to weld in between that last book and this book? Because you could say this is a science fiction adventure movie, a book. There's a heist story going on. But really, it's a book about welding. And it's kind of impressive how much welding goes on in this book.
The way that you say that now,
There's a lot of welding.
No, it's not that much.
No, I was timing.
In some sections, there's more of it. And
yeah, in the end section.
Yes, in the end section.
There was this huge part. I was like, right, we're ramping up. There's this final. There's going to be some action. There's going to be some interesting stuff here. There's going to be something disastrous happen, and then they're going to have to solve that problem, whatever. And then it was sort of like, on the audiobook, it was like a 25 to 30 minute diversion about how to cut with a welding torch or a burning torch or whatever, how to cut through two walls. Now, I enjoyed it, but it was sort of like, we're doing this with all this actions happening and people back there and people are following us around and we don't need to do this. And suddenly the story goes, screeches to a halt. And now it's sort of like, right, now we're going to spend an hour and a half's worth of time cutting holes through this wall. And then welding different plates together, and she's getting stuff from her, like the main character Jazz, she's getting stuff from her parent, from her father, sorry, about, oh, this weld, and someone else is like, no, I'm going to be here, safety. Like, I know underwater welding is like a big, very dangerous thing, like welding in a vacuum-sealed welding.
Yeah, but this is why it is so special.
Yeah.
Let's just start at the beginning, okay?
Going back to the very beginning.
Yeah, so
this book actually came out about welding.
No,
okay.
It came out in November last year.
Oh, but so it's a pretty new book.
So it is a very new book.
Oh, okay, I wasn't sure how.
Yeah, it says here, it won already an award.
What award?
The Goodreads Choice Award for Science
Goodreads.
Fiction.
Well, of course it's going to be... Like this. Like I say, this is a guy who has got a popular following because yes. his first book was very good. It kind of like set a new standard for... Well, not a new standard, but like for a popular book, it kind of like was like, oh no, this is not... this is kind of not even a science fiction book. This is a science nerdery book. This is a technical manual yes. of how to build a space station on Mars. But and there's a bit of a story that goes along with
but
it.
But also it is very fun because I'm guessing... A lot of people already, this is like a thought experiment. It's yeah. like, you are by yourself, you have yeah. this kind of expertise.
Yeah, it's total wish fulfillment.
Exactly. Like, it's totally what everyone yeah. was already thinking about, and then now the guy wrote it down in yeah. all the specifics.
Yeah.
So this one is actually a bit different because yeah. it plays on There's, the moon.
Yeah, it's a moon. It's yeah. not on the Mars.
It's on the moon, so it's closer to Earth.
The first one was called The Martian because he was the only person on Mars. Like, yeah. Andy Weir. No, not Andy Weir. What was his name? Mark Watney was the only person on Mars. So he was
the Martian.
The Martian. Yeah. Like, definite article Martian. That was him. And this could have been called a moon person. I don't know what you call like a loony. I guess loony is always the word
loony,
that they...
Yeah, he mentioned this kind of stuff, yeah. like the way that they want to be called.
Yeah, what the people on the moon want to be called.
Yes.
Lunars or whatever, something like that. I can't remember.
Artemisians.
Artemisians. Anyway, Artemis is a city on the moon. It's a big city. Well, it's not even a big city.
I wouldn't call it city.
But they call it the city.
Yeah, but it's like the place where people live on the moon.
It's the only place where private citizens can live on the moon. 2,000 people in it's a settlement, but yeah. it's 2,000 people in five domes with connecting passages.
Yeah,
passages.
So let me. You listen to the audiobook?
I listen
right?
to the audiobook. Yeah,
I had the ebook.
Yes, and what do you want to say? What you're looking for in the ebook?
One very important thing is that, of course,
talking to the microphone.
How can I just skip to the front of the book?
What are you talking? Just search chapter info okay. title. Okay, what okay. you're looking for?
Oh, come on. Anyway, so because I read the book, I have something that you didn't have.
You had a map.
I had lots of maps.
Oh, right. Yes, that makes sense. I did kind of get that. To be honest, I don't really think I needed this map, but like it does kind of make it like there's these five domes and it says Armstrong was the first dome, but because it was the first dome, it was the smallest dome, but it was kind of in the middle there. So yes, yeah. I do understand it. And that's where that's the airlock and these are the air tanks that they have. Yeah. So I guess yeah. some of the maps would be pretty fun there. I get this thing. Yeah, these maps, to be honest, not really needed. Artemis is pretty clear.
It was described
well enough yeah. that you didn't need the maps.
Yes. Anyway, but I wanted to mention that.
It is fun that there are maps there.
And so Artemis is the settlement on the moon.
Yeah, and the story follows Jazz Bashir. Jasmine, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, Jasmine.
Yeah, but shortened to Jazz. Tell me about Jasmine. What did you like Jasmine, or what was going on with Jasmine?
I quite enjoyed hanging out with her. There are several things that I liked about the book which would fit now.
Okay.
Can I now?
Yeah, tell me. Yeah, let's do
okay.
it.
What I really like about Andy Weir is the way his language works.
Yes.
I noticed that with The Martian as well. It's such a just a normal language. It's nothing yep. elaborate, nothing special. It's just how people speak.
Yeah.
And I really like that, the way he writes
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I really like that. But in some ways, it's because the voice of this is a first-person narrator. Mark Watney was a first-person narrator. It's sort of yeah. like, this is my diary. Here I yes. go. This is what's going on. Yeah. And now we have a first-person narrator. And unfortunately, you understand... I know it's weird to say this, but he's not quite good enough to pull off somebody who isn't just, a white male nerd technician kind of person. Because Jasmine yeah. was in some ways a little bit too close to Mark Watney, and then you understand, oh, Mark Watney is probably a little bit close to Andy Weir. So you realise yeah. that, oh, Andy Weir, it's really difficult for him to just say, oh, I'm just going to be a 27-year-old or 26-year-old woman from a Muslim family who...
Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia background
who really likes sex, but in many ways is kind of just very much the same as Mark Watney, which is yes. fine because, like you say, I enjoyed spending time with Mark Watney, and it's even though I say, oh, it's just this kind of thing, but with a different costume.
I actually quite enjoyed that mix of of the personality. Mm-hmm. It reminded me a little bit because on Sunday I just watched an episode of Firefly, and it reminded me a little bit of Kaylee.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, the kind of like.
No, I didn't get that at all, but okay. I understand what you're saying.
You know, it's like this this certain persona. She doesn't give a shit, she kind of does, but
here's the thing. Again, you say, is this a time to say what you like about this book? I really enjoyed a lot of what was in this book.
Yeah.
However, I think the main strength of this is, in some ways, the descriptions of welding, but even though some of them go on too long, but like the descriptions of how the moon was settled, and I like it, and other things, which I'll get onto more of what I like about this.
Yeah.
But I do think the major deficiency in this book is this main character.
Yeah.
Again, someone who is fun to spend time with is fine, and she was fun to spend time with, but nothing more than fine. Does that make sense? Like, Andy Weir isn't a good enough author to say, like, instead of writing about a white male technician who's about my age but happens to be on Mars, to actually The Martian was very, very low difficulty in terms of writing characters, because he could just make someone fun. He could make them like 70s disco music. He could he could make them swear a lot and tell fun jokes and be a little bit of a rebel, but somehow being part of a team on Mars. You know, he's like he was in the fifth team to Mars or whatever like that. So he doesn't have to be the most amazing explorer or the height of character. He could just be a person who is stuck in a bad situation and is using humor to get through a bad situation. To stop himself going crazy about being the only person on Mars in all this kind of stuff, he uses humor and stuff to get through, which is great. It's a fun thing. The difficulty level of writing someone who's literally isolated on Mars and doesn't have a lot of interpersonal relationships with people, that was all, like, there was a bit of that in NASA, and you had the press secretary, you know, you remember the press secretary?
Yeah,
who was this person who just, again, was swearing at people and whatever. It's sort of like, all right, okay, so that book was high difficulty level in pulling off a book which kept up the tension and technical details enough that it was fun to read, but very, very low difficulty measurement in terms of interpersonal relationships and character development. Like, Mark Watney started off as a wisecracking, technician who was, in the face of death, laughed in the face of death and got through that. And it's an interesting character, but he kind of ended up in exactly the same place. I think the movie actually did it better, where you see Matt Damon later on, he's lost all that weight and he just looks like, you can kind of see the craziness in his eyes in a way which doesn't come across in the book.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a different character, in the movie and the book.
It's a little bit different,
But in this book, like, the character arc of Jazz, she does things, but she doesn't really learn so much. We have part of her backstory revealed to us as we go through the book, but it doesn't really feel like she's developing as a character. Do you understand that? Like, and she does a bit, but again, Andy Weir, the author here, has aimed for something, and this book, I think, was aiming beyond what he is capable of. He didn't bite off more than he can chew, because in the end, it's fine. But this book really shows up how much it's about welding and not about characters way more than The Martian did, because The Martian was literally about biology. He's a technician who also happens to be a botanist on the moon, or on Mars, or whatever. Sort of like, it's a bit strange that this technician is also a botanist. It's like, that's what you need to be one of five people on the moon, on the Mars, or whatever.
Well, what I actually, I think I disagree a little bit with your with the thing about the welding and the action and the personal, like the characters. I actually experienced it different, maybe because I've read the book, and maybe because then the speed that you get it in is slightly different, I think.
At your speed,
So I actually think there was the welding. There was the welding bit at the end, though, and I think over the course of the book, she has lots of interaction with lots of different kind of people.
Yes.
And here it's more like about how she has these interactions separate, and then they come all together into like a team at some point.
Yes.
And it's more about her being able to,
unites
to,
the team.
To kind of manage the stuff.
I never found it convincing. I never thought that anybody would ever follow her, take her advice on anything, work with her. Like, if I met that person on the moon,
yeah,
I would literally be saying, this is probably one of the... And I actually wrote notes about this as we were going... Before I got to the dangerous parts of the book.
Yeah.
I was like, this person is a hazard, not just to herself, but to everyone. Her lack of regard for other people. And I find it utterly unbelievable that anybody would ever give her a third chance. A second chance, yes, but a third chance at anything. And what happens to her at the end of the book, again, maybe we'll get into spoilers later on, I thought was the biggest cop-out. Because if she had done what she had done in this book, she would be lynched. There would have been a mob going after her. She would have been killed. She would have been thrown off the moon. And because that didn't happen at multiple points, and yet somehow she became like a leader and people were following her in these plans at the end, was utterly unconvincing. To the point being that if this was a better writer, I'm not saying Andy Weir is a bad writer, because again, this is just, I'm getting out the way, like, my main criticism of the book. Yeah. If this was like Ian M. Banks or someone like that, where you're reading it and you're going, this is a first person narrator, and you're like, is this an unreliable narrator? I don't think Andy Weir is a good enough writer to pull off an unreliable narrator. But she keeps saying how people keep telling her that she's a genius, and if she'd only apply herself, she'd do well. And it's sort of like, oh, and then the welding guild came to me and wanted me to join the welding guild, and then the technicians guild came and wanted me there, and then the air supply guild, they wanted me as well, and in the end I became a porter and was delivering things, and they, you know, oh, and then the spacesuit guild, EVA guild, and I wanted to be in there, and they wouldn't have me, but they were just jealous that I was so clever and stuff like that. All the way through this book, I was like, is Jazz utterly delusional about her own capabilities? And I was literally going through, she was like, she's made a plan, and my notes are literally, how the hell does she think this is going to work? This is never going to work. This is obviously a bad idea. Now, here's the clever thing, is that the ideas that she has are bad ideas, and they play out badly, and disasters do happen. You know, and I was thinking, is Andy Weir, did someone go through and say, oh, like, this is a good plan, but it's never going to work? And then he was like, all right, I'll write it so it never works. You know, so in some ways, I'm like, what I like about this book and what he's aiming for is sort of like, there's someone who thinks they're clever and is pretending to be clever and telling us that they're very clever, making loads of mistakes. But if that's the real way, like, she should die at the end of the book, or she should be thrown off the moon at the end of the book, because she isn't capable. Or if she is, she's utterly naive, is played for a fool time and time again. And it's really weird to read someone who's written a book like this, which is totally unreflective of the unreliable narratorness of the main narrator, this first-person narrator of Jazz. But I kind of want to give him credit for writing a story where somebody is saying, oh no, I'm a genius, I'm really clever, and then fails lots. But the payoff at the end of the book is like, oh no, it turns out she is actually a genius, and everyone does like her, and it's all fine at the end. And I was like, no, if you're going to write an unreliable narrator, there has to be consequences. And there aren't any consequences. Do you understand what I'm saying there?
Sure.
So while I enjoyed the twists and the turns, which were, oh, this is going to be a good idea, but actually it fails or whatever like that. Anyway, it's a tricky balance to pull off. And if Andy Weir was a better writer of characters, I would give him full credit for doing the unreliable narrator thing. But I just think he's just not good enough at writing characters. It's like, I'm forgiving him too much.
Yeah.
I'm reading too much into this, you know.
You do. You totally do.
Because you didn't read it that way at all.
I mean, I did. There were some, like, bumpy bits where I thought, this doesn't quite...
Mm.
You know, that's not quite... Yeah. As convincing to me as like
as it should be, yeah.
As it should be, and as the thing with the team, and she manages the thing, is totally the thing that I don't really see her. Like, the thing is, she is not doing all the things.
She's not a team.
She doesn't have the plan, because it's other people. It's her dad doing the welding. It's the guy.
But in the end, she does it all.
No, she is the executioner.
Oh, yes, yeah, I understand. Yeah, she's the hands and eyes of people.
She's the hands and eyes of... She does the handy bits, but in the end, the planning and the clever thinking and, like, making things, is not really her.
It's,
you know, it's
yeah,
like
she, okay, she, yeah, I understand what you're saying.
The
yeah.
one guy does the this stuff, and then the EVA guy yeah. drives the thing.
Yeah, the technician makes the widgets. The yeah, EVA exactly. guy does the
so
driving.
She,
yeah,
she is not really. She isn't really the mastermind.
No.
And I.
But what I'm saying is, she writes it as though she is.
And
but then the story plays out as though she is as well.
And what was a little bit annoying, to be honest, was the constant saying like, oh, I get people to say to me like, you should put more like things.
Yeah,
in it.
Wasted potential.
Yes, wasted potential.
And then she's like, oh, and my memory is amazing. And you're like, but is it really?
Yeah,
I don't know.
And all these kind of little things, they've got a little bit too much on there.
Yeah.
Like, it's a little bit too much of waving the...
Yeah, waving
hey,
the flag.
Hey,
remember
you get
this part.
All the time
yeah.
and stuff. Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, so I thought that was... There are a lot of little flaws in the thing.
Yeah.
What I really liked... though
yeah
was that this story takes place over 4 days.
No, it's a bit more than that.
No,
she
no,
actually
no,
says
four,
she says she says at the end of a week, the full story is a week, I think, by the time
it was literally 4 days.
Oh really?
Yes.
Oh okay.
And that's what I like first, because
yeah.
it's like a very condensed thing. It's very
okay. Well, let's just say what the story is then. I'm just saying, but the whole point is that She's on the moon. There's 2,000 people there, and a rich person says, "Hey, I need someone to do a dodgy job for me." And she's like,
she smuggles things.
She's a smuggler. She's kind of on the dodgy side of the dodgy side of the law anyway. But she really, she's kind of like living, was it hand to mouth? Like, she's got a tiny little coffin, I think they're called. Like, you know, she doesn't have an apartment. She's got a room which is slightly bigger than her in all dimensions, but
she's
only
sleeping.
Slightly.
Yeah.
She sleeps there, and she's like, I really need some this, and also I need exactly this amount of money.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, well, what does she need for that exactly amount of money? I thought it was going to be someone she has to pay off something down on Earth, because she has a pen pal down on Earth.
Yeah.
But it becomes quite clear. Oh, actually, she needs. I don't want to give it away what the money is for. But it becomes quite obvious. It gets mentioned at some point. She's like, oh, I need this big chunk of money, and this guy, this Norwegian, is like, I need someone to do this big chunk of money, and she's like, let's give it a go.
Yeah, and I made actually a note of this scene.
Oh,
because
Juliana made 4 notes as she read through the entire... Oh, 5 notes, okay.
5.
So where are your notes? Your first note is, ha ha ha.
Yeah, my first note is ha ha.
To what?
Oh no, not this one.
Oh, it's a different note.
No,
okay, this
so,
is great. This is great, this is great. Oh, the crying emoji. What's that?
So, this is like... the scene where she does the talk to the guy who wants to...
She does this whole ethical thing about, oh, well, it's ethical to do this and moral to do this, or should I do that, or whatever. Like
so
this.
It's like, no, I was a smuggler, not a saboteur.
Saboteur. Yeah.
And something smelled off about the whole thing. I'm sorry, but this isn't my thing, I said. You'll have to find someone else. I'll give you 1,000,000 slugs. Deal.
Yeah.
So, and that whole, like... It's so like money driven.
Yeah,
like, the money can convince her immediately. And
yeah.
not in only in that one.
Yeah, there's a few times
in other things as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, there is a few times where it's she seems very, I don't know, like very mercenary about it. It's sort of like
yeah.
blah blah blah. All of this, all these different
yeah,
kind of things.
All the moral.
But in the end, and I,
the money
in a way that makes an interesting character, that she is just like, oh no, just give me the money, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
But that shows, that literally that line there was something which made me think, this person is the most dangerous person on the moon.
Yeah.
I literally thought that as I was going, I might have even made a note about it. Maybe, I know my first note is Artemis City, 2,000 people, about the same size as a cruise ship. So I kind of liked that, like, life on the moon kind
yeah.
of thing. Different people with different sized rooms, and some people you do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
On working on cruise ships, you know, like, I've just been on a ship for 4 weeks, about 2,000 people on there, including, like, on the moon, because it's kind of a resort town for people coming in. But then, like, there's the crew on a cruise ship who are there all the time
have
a very different life.
It's actually how it starts, with saying like, oh yeah, you have the people who have the money, but you also need the people who work for them.
So it goes, how does she think this plan is a good idea? Is like one of my first notes.
But just before she agrees to it, she
She talks through how it's a bad idea.
How it's not gone to work.
It's like, this is a really bad idea. I shouldn't do this kind of thing. Money, deal. And I'm like, oh shit, this is going to go wrong. And I just knew straight away it was going to go. It felt straight away that it was going to go wrong.
This story is not about a success story.
Yeah, so there's like two heists. One heist which goes wrong, and then another kind of heist to fix the thing that went wrong once we've worked out what all everyone's motivations were and the politics behind it and the crime scene behind it and all that kind of thing.
Somehow that second one has like the backing of the...
Yeah. So here's a weird thing. Politically, I actually really liked this.
Yes, thing, me too.
Because you start off and they were talking about it. I was just like, And as they were talking about it, I was like, how does the economics of this... I was literally thinking about like, okay, technically this is good. There's the domes, there's the double layer domes, there's this place and there's the tubes and all that kind of stuff. And he was talking through, and this is what the book is about. There's lots of like air pumping from here to there and this thing going from here and there's these systems here and someone has a fault on their spacesuit and they've got to fix it here. And how do they do all these different kind of things? Oh, and how do you get tourists to walk around? Lots of valves, lots of pipes, lots of domes, lots of windows and all that kind of stuff. And I was reading it all and I was thinking, how does this work economically? And like one of the big twists, or one of the twists in the book, which is just to say, oh no, it doesn't, the whole system is fucked, like and it's, I'm like, oh, it's all a money laundering scheme and this kind of thing. Again, I don't want to give too much away from that, but when it was saying at the end of the book, when she was talking to this economist and she was like, all right, this is weird, this is not what I was expecting at all, I was like, actually I kind of did work that out. And this is something which I kind of enjoyed about this book, is because it's so much is set out, I could feel clever working out the things that were going to go wrong or the things that didn't add up. And it's so nice to read a book which doesn't have to use hidden information to like surprise you into touring. No, it's everything is out there.
Yeah.
Like here is literally second heist. How is this going to go well? My note was, don't fuck with the air supply. Next note, lots of welding. Next note, yup, air supply. And I was literally like this, and it was one of those things where I was just like, how does she not know how the air, like, don't fuck, if you're on the moon, don't fuck with the air supply. And they're like,
you're not the only person saying that. It gets mentioned like all through all, like, there's one, there are two things that are really critical.
Yeah, it's like the air supplies. Because it's all oxygen. It's like the oxygen. Yeah. They even said, like, on the Saturn 1 rocket or whatever it was, where they were like, oh, actually, we can lower the pressure and just have pure oxygen. But if anything catches fire, it's all gone like that. Anyway, so they're talking about this thing. And I was like, and this is the good thing about the writing, is that the technical situation, the world building is so good that when someone is approaching a problem, I was like, right, here's how we're going to do it. I was already going, no, because of this air pipe. Like I was actually just going, no, you just wrote a scene of them driving a vehicle over this air pipe, which connects that to there. The plan that you're going to do, don't do it. And as I was reading it, I was just going to go, this is going to go really wrong. And of course, the big twist is that it goes really wrong and they've got to get out of that situation. But it was one of those things where I was like, oh, this is actually a different reading experience. And this is why it makes me think that Jazz is an unreliable narrator, because she is flawed, incompetent, but it's kind of, but like I say, it's weird that it's written that she's the genius in this situation and she's the clever one. Like, if I was a clever business person, I would never give her $1 million. Actually, it works out, like, I don't know what the exchange rate was, but it's like more than $1 million to do this job. I would never trust her to come anywhere near anything that I was doing, and people keep trusting her. So like, just trust me, this is gonna go right. And I was like, you've just destroyed all this stuff. Like, how do we keep, like, and then she meets the administrator of the moon, who's this like Nobel Prize winning whatever. Well, I think she didn't win the Nobel Prize. I think that's what she said. She's like, she should have won it for economics and then the Peace Prize or whatever. But she, you know, was that one of the lines about that character?
I can't remember.
But and then these other people are like, oh yeah, just trust me on this. I was like, don't trust her. And you know what? They shouldn't have trusted her. There would have been a different way to sort out this situation. All of the problems in this book, every single one of them, come from Jazz being incompetent. But the book is written as though she is competent. But all of it is her. Like, every single problem comes from her being an idiot. But the book isn't written that way and isn't resolved that way. And that, you understand what I'm saying? Like,
well,
of the problems that are solved in the second half of the book, which of those problems that are solved weren't caused by the main character in the first place? None. All of them were caused by her, except for like the rich person, Trond, whatever his name was, Trond Landvig or something like
that.
Yeah,
it wasn't all, but the thing is, she would have never done this by herself.
No, she wouldn't.
So she was set up to go this way.
Yeah, but when Trond Landvig at the start was like, hey, I need someone to take out these things. And I was thinking, oh, this is going to be clever. She's going to hack into the control system. Oh, she's going to go over there and she has to destroy some tractors or whatever they are. And I was like, well, okay, this is going to be a bit tricky. It's going to be tricky to like knock them out, but then in the future be able to use them, but it's going to take too long. And in the end, it's sort of like, oh, my big plan was literally blow them up. So like, and I was like, oh, there's no subtle, like, and it's sort of like, how did she think she was going to do that without getting caught? And of course the twist is, no, she gets caught. It doesn't work. Like all these things just don't work. And again, I don't want to give away too much, but it's, but as I was reading it through, it was just like, if I was gonna say, like, the only way that this makes sense is if she was told that she was gonna get $1 million to do this, but the plan was all the way through was that she was gonna try and do it, she was gonna get caught, and then that was gonna be the next step. But it doesn't go in that way either. You know what I mean? Like I
didn't quite see it like the way that you did.
Yeah.
And but what I did see was more that like the way that this like. Oh, she messed up.
Yeah.
And then nobody actually could put this on her.
Yeah, but it was so obvious.
2,000 people on the moon. That it's like,
yeah.
It's like the perfect place to always have to always know, yeah, where people are.
Yeah, and they even say this at one point. They're like, oh yeah, we have cameras on the inside of the airlocks, but we don't have the cameras on the outside of the airlocks. And there's no. And I was just like, what? Why? And I understand that, actually, because working on cruise ships, there are doors, which is kind of an honor system. It's like, don't open this door. And you're like, if someone did open that door and then a wave came through, that could, like, really damage a lot of, like, the ship. You know, like, because I know what those doors, those watertight doors, like, at the, yeah, on different levels are like. You don't fuck around with them. But there's no locks on them, because in an emergency, everyone has to go through.
Of course,
there are alarms on them and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and a lot of this is sort of like, I need to get through this airlock without being...
But it doesn't really matter if there are 2,000 people.
Yeah.
And you want to know did it.
Yes, you're going to find them.
you kind of know, okay, like... 1,999 people were inside. Who was the one person that wasn't inside?
Yeah.
And you would know.
But the thing is, they do know. And at one point, they're like, oh, how do you track someone? Oh, yeah, there's just someone who's got administrator privileges and you can just track everything that they do online and see where they are and find out their location, all that other kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you're just like, how did she ever think she was going to get away with this? And at the time, she was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get 1,000,000 slugs and I need that for something. And you're just like, how... There is no perfect, like, and it felt kind of disappointing that in the end it was so unsubtle, and it's sort of like,
it was the whole book is very unsubtle. It's
yeah,
very, it plays it out on the open. Everything is there.
But she thinks she's going to get away with this. And I was like, how does she think she's going to get away?
I don't even think she did.
But she was saying, she was like, oh, I'm going to go out there with my spacesuit and I'm going to cover up my name tag.
Right from the beginning, she said that that wasn't going to work. And she knew she wasn't going to make it.
Yes, I just didn't understand. I just didn't. Anyway. So I think we've gone into the story, and I mean, I don't want to spoil anything. I think
did spoil.
No, there's bits and pieces. Again, this is not a book about the outcomes. This is much more a book about the technical details,
yes,
along the way. What I loved about this book. Oh, sorry, Cameron, what were you going
to
say?
Yeah, I wanted just to say my biggest point that I like most.
Okay.
Can I say that?
Yeah, yeah, go for it.
What I liked most about it was that there was no fucking sex scenes, no fucking...
And how do you say that? How
because,
do you say that? I know, I get it, I get it. I found
it was,
that...
It would have been the worst,
yes,
ever.
I know.
And it didn't need it.
I
didn't have it, and I liked that.
I actually mentioned to you when you started reading it, I was like, did you get to the condom scene yet? Anyway, there's Chekhov's condom in this book. Now,
it's not Chekhov's.
It is Chekhov's condom. Chekhov's condom is... If there's a gun, if you see someone, a gun on the wall in scene one, in act one, in act three, the gun has to be fired. Someone has to shoot the gun. Like, that's the whole point.
The gun on the wall? What do you mean?
In your play, if you go to a play and you sit down in the theater and someone has done a scene, this is Chekhov's gun,
okay,
and there's a gun hanging on the wall on the back of the stage, and
yeah,
there's just a gun there, and then there's lots of drama and there's lots of conflicts and stuff like that.
The gun has a purpose.
The gun has a purpose. Someone's going to pick that gun up and shoot someone by the end of the thing. Okay, so that's what Chekhov's gun is. And you see it time and time again. Someone will introduce something at the start of the... of a book or the start of the story. And you'll be like...
it wasn't really at the start.
No, no, but I'm just saying, you'll be like, that's been mentioned 4 times already. I wonder if that's going to come in. Anyway, Chekhov's condom. I never thought it was going to lead to a sex scene because it just didn't feel like that kind of book. But I was like, Chekhov's condom, newly invented super condom that can be used many times and never pops and stuff. And I was like, this is going to be used to
just
seal...
Just the description of that.
But it's going to be used... So they're going to use it to seal an airlock. Or it's going to be in a book. Like, or at the end of the... And literally at the end of the book, she was like, how am I going to get out of this pressure situation? I was like, Chekhov's condom, you've got a condom, this super condom which never bursts. Climb into the condom. I don't know what you're going to do, but like, do the thing with the... Like, there's a valve there. You actually, all this time. And I was like, this is my note at the end of the book. 39 minutes remaining. One valve away from victory. Got to use the condoms. This is actually a thing. Like, I was one valve away from victory and I didn't know how to get through it. And I was like, this is it. She's going to use the condom. It's going to happen. Chekhov's condom is going to be fired. Well, no.
It's Svoboda.
Yeah, but whatever. It's Chekhov, for this narration purpose, the storytelling purposes, Chekhov's condom. And it was never... She didn't use it at the end of the
book. No, I don't even think she had it on her.
No, she must have. I don't even know. But she was always like... And the guy giving it was like, oh, have you tested the condom yet? Have you tested it out? Because he just wants some user feedback about this condom. Every time that we meet, it was like, have you used the condom yet? And she was like, stop being creepy. It's been like one day. How often do you think I have sex? And he was like, yeah, pretty often. And he was like, I'm going to have to teach you how to talk to girls and things like that.
Yeah.
So, yes, in one way, that there was no sex and also that the condom wasn't used. Anyway, so yeah, that is a plus about this book because I think it would have been a bit cringy to actually have the sex scene.
Yes.
However, there's lots of talk about how Jazz has a lot of sex sex.
But that just, I think that the talk about her in that way just puts a patina to her personality.
Yeah,
it's more about to show that she's kind of like a
worldwide
woman. She just acts totally like a guy.
Yes,
in lots of ways.
Yes, she is one of the guys in a way.
She's a guy.
Yeah,
and she has sex where she wants and does this, and she...
It's very sex positive. It reminds me actually a lot of this. Have you read The Moon is a Harsh Mistress?
No.
Anyway, there's a lot of Moon is a Harsh Mistress in this book, including a lot of the sex positive stuff. You know, however, it is a bit weird how sex positive she is. And they're even saying, oh yeah, sex on the moon is really great but she never says, there was never that moment where she says, oh, people always talk about how sex on the moon is really great because, you know, it's all, there's a right amount of, there's even, think there's an Isaac Asimov book called On Mars Station with Martha or something like that. And it's a whole book about how great it is to have sex in Mars gravity. And the moon is not enough gravity. Zero gravity sex is actually really difficult and needs straps and stuff like that.
It's the sixth of the gravity of the Earth, isn't it?
Yeah, on the moon it is. But on Mars it's like a third or whatever it is. I can't remember. Or a half the gravity. I can't remember.
Okay.
But they're saying, one third gravity is better than one sixth gravity. Anyway, she keeps... this is mentioned a lot of times in this, but we never actually get the moon gravity sex scene in the book. Which is fine.
I totally, you know, currently I'm listening to the Dreaming
Room. Oh, you don't have to go on about Peter F. Hamilton sex scenes again.
Holy fuck, this guy, what the hell is wrong with him in his life?
Yes.
You totally think, like, what the hell is his problem?
Okay, let's get away from Peter F. Hamilton. Let's
go
back to Andy Weir.
Very nice, very relaxed. I didn't have to, like, there were no...
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I also like the twist with the ex-boyfriend.
What ex-boyfriend?
The gay guy.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That was fun.
Yeah, but it did. Some of that did feel like box-ticking. It's sort of like, okay, I can't just have a white man as my protagonist, so let's have a Muslim or an Arabic background woman who's
a
young woman.
Technician.
A Ukrainian guy, and then a gay guy, but he can't just be gay. Oh, let's have him Jewish and gay, and then let's have a black person, and let's have a token white person.
Quite nice.
Yeah, I know.
One thing I wanted to mention, very, like, because it was standing out from the beginning, it was saying at the beginning they live in Nairobi time on the moon. And I was thinking, how, why? And then it's explained
Nairobi
time. And the way that it is explained is so fun because it is so totally unexpected.
Of
it's
what?
So, like,
what, that Nairobi is the
space
center.
If you would think of our society right now, who would you think is the main sponsor of a moon base?
Unfortunately, I've read Alistair Reynolds' books. So in his, like, there's a, like, he literally wrote a 3-part series about elephants in space. And the reason there's elephants in space is because the main space industry place is Tanzania.
Ah, fucking.
and they use Mount Kilimanjaro as a ramp to launch things into space. So this entire family and stuff like that.
Obviously, the idea is good because it is around the equator, and I really like
that. That's literally what it is. It's sort of like, what do you need? And you're like, oh, if you're going to launch stuff into space from the equator, Africa's on the what part of Africa's on the equator? Yeah. And they're sort of like, oh yeah, Kilimanjaro, pretty much there. Take off from there. You get the low air pressure at the top or whatever it is, you know.
Well, in this book, it's not Tanzania, it's Kenya.
But it's what I mean.
I really like the... I mean, for me, obviously, I haven't read this book. And so for me, it came a little bit more surprising and, like, really clever in a way.
Yeah, that it is a bit annoying, actually, when you read these, quite a few of these other books, and you're reading it and you're going, has nobody... Like, does nobody in science fiction circles read Alistair Reynolds except people who read Alistair Reynolds? Because, like, there's just so much stuff where you just go, he did this, like, 15 years ago in, like, his third novel. He's done this whole story and done this whole thing. I mean, it's not totally like that, but, I mean, we're currently reading an Alistair Reynolds book, which is not groundbreaking in any way. But, again, there's lots of stuff that I read in other science fiction books. They were like, do people not read, like... Ian M. Banks and Alistair Reynolds and some of these other people,
maybe the writers do.
Well, maybe read
them
I don't know.
The readers don't read.
Well,
them.
It's a bit strange.
There was one thing that I need to ask you about because I read the book and you listened to the audiobook.
Okay.
There are things that you don't see when you listen to something.
Yeah, like what?
There was, you know, the pen pal.
All right. Oh, yeah. That's actually done pretty well in the audiobook. That's no problem.
Yeah. It might be done at somehow. I want to show you how it's done in the book, in the writing book.
Yeah.
It's done like this.
Oh, right. Like text backwards and forwards. Like, so...
No. This is one part. This is all jazz. This is Kelvin. So
some of it in bold or not?
Exactly. My question, was it like different in the audio? Did they change the...
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, it was just sort of like, dear Jazz, dear Kelvin. So it was kind of obvious who was talking there.
Yeah.
And
but then it's like always like you have...
I don't understand why.
And then suddenly it gets bold and then it gets normal.
Maybe that's just
again.
A PDF thing. Oh, no, this is an app.
It's all... No, no.
Kindle. It's a
Kindle
book.
It's a Kindle book. But then it's okay. Every time she writes him, it's this like... There again.
Yeah,
thin,
I wonder why.
Big,
yeah.
I have no idea.
Don't worry about it.
And sometimes it's more, and then...
There's... Can I talk about what I liked about this book, then?
Sure, your go. I didn't have so much to say
currently. No, I know, but it was good. It was good that we got there.
I wanted to have my...
The thing, your main positive was the negative of... Again, I thought it was a little bit weird having... I don't know, it just, in some ways it felt a little bit creepy about talking about someone who was so sex positive, written by... a white guy about... I know it's weird. That's just some of my stuff. Like, did I need to hear so much about the sex life of a 26-year-old Arabic woman
really?
On the moon?
You thought there was much?
She talked about sex a lot. There was a lot of talking about her past sex stuff, and she's dressing up as a hooker, and she's like, oh yeah, prostitutes are fine, I don't have any problem with them, but it's not kind of me. Sex in moon gravity, sex in... There was a lot of mentions of sex.
I thought that was totally casual.
It's
and
fine.
I really like the casualness of it.
Again, I don't have any problem with it. I think it worked okay, and that the condom wasn't used in a sex scene and that there wasn't a sex scene is good, because it would have crossed the line into way too creepy at that point. I'm just saying it felt in some ways a little bit too like, oh no, it's also sex positive, like it's fine, you know, to be, you know, it's good. That's kind of... Anyway, what I really liked about this book, and I mentioned it a few times, is just the world building about this and all the characters. Like, how many different professions do you need to be on the moon? What is needed? And it does feel like he's gone the guilds are great, the economics are great, the criminal underworld is great, like all of these different things and all the different nationalities, like going, oh, when someone gets to the moon, somebody who just happened to be Vietnamese was the first guy who worked on the air pipes, and then he's his family wants to move it with him there, all of this thing is just... That's just a Vietnamese thing now. So all of the Vietnamese do that. And then, oh, and there's some Ukrainians and they're... Oh, yeah, all the Ukrainians are just in charge of the...
IT.
Whatever. All departments and stuff. And I totally understand that. And, oh, it's handy because, if you want to have an operation, all the air people, they're going to have the instructions in Vietnamese because they all speak Vietnamese. So yeah, well, let's just have all the instructions in Vietnamese. You know, I really liked all of that world building, like that where the domes are and what was connecting them. A few times I was like, that doesn't sound right. And then later on we found out, oh no, that wasn't right. That was actually a bad thing. You know, that was a design flaw. Yeah. So again, what I liked about this book so much is that I really got into the story and could really enjoy the story so much because the world was built up so well that none of the twists got to me. Well, not none of the twists, but like everything that was laid out played out so logically. It's like literally, I'm going to describe a world so well that you don't have to even like, sort of like here. It's like it was like a mathematical formula.
Yeah.
Plus one idiot. How badly is this going to go? And because the formula was described so well that when you just go, and now let's throw in the wild card, let's just throw in the element of chaos or whatever it is, you know, like throw in that chaotic element into it, and how is it going to spin out? And I was like, badly, and then it spins out badly in a logical way, you know. So like I say, in a way, I kind of wish someone had written this story. Laid out all the characters, laid out all the kind of different stuff, all the different political stuff, all the different economic stuff, all the different technical stuff, all the scenes with welding, except maybe one of them cut it in the length in half of the welding scene near the end of the book, all that kind of thing. But then just get someone to just do a pass over this book and just go, okay, this character, this main character, is like either needs to be written better, less stupid, less naive, or have a little bit of self-awareness and... really, she needs to die at the end, or there needs to be some consequences at the end, because it seemed a little bit too much of a Hollywood ending for this whole kind of thing. And I know it's a weird thing to say that I like the different twists, like when I'm reading a book, like thinking, oh, this is going to go really wrong. Yeah. And then it goes wrong in not exactly the way that I think it's going to go, but the wrongness expresses itself in a very satisfying way.
Yeah.
If a better writer could have reflected that back into the story and back into the characters in the book better.
Yes.
There needed to be some characters who weren't won over by Jazz and actually was like, no, you are the most dangerous person on the moon. What? I always thought she was the most dangerous person on the moon. And you know what she was in this book? She was literally the most dangerous person on the moon.
I think if the people listening to this now count up how often you said
she's the most, and she's like, we've got to fight off the bad guys. Fight off the bad guys. Okay. And I was like, there are better, less dangerous ways to fight off the bad. There's like, okay, when all the bad guys arrive, just kill all the bad guys and you'll probably get away with it.
Okay, let me say something. I think actually the book is kind of like, do you say that in English? In German, you say Nullrechnung. It's like when you have a two sides of a equation.
Yeah.
Is that how you say it?
Yeah, it balances out.
It balances out into zero. And this is what happens in this book. To be honest, in the end, nothing changed.
Yes, well, it kind of does.
And what changed is that they now know, okay, we should check this system and that system.
No, it isn't. It's like a billionaire wants something. Oh, and it turns out if you've got billions of dollars, yeah, you can just buy your way out of anything. And I'm like, that can't be the message of this book.
Is it?
The message of this book is if you have enough money, you're gonna be fine.
Yeah, but that's how capitalism works.
Yes, I know, and that's what I like.
It doesn't matter if it's on the moon or on the earth.
Again, that's literally the economic lesson when they have the economics lesson at the end, where she has it and she goes, oh, economics is scary, man. And I'm like, yeah, it is. And that's what I like about this book, is that all of the systems work out.
She does get, I mean, of course, you can talk about how bad the punishment is that she gets. And
she,
if it is worth... If it is worth what, like, in relation to what she did.
No, but the point is...
I personally think it is enough of a thing to her. And it would have been not...
No.
Yes.
No. At one point, someone in authority over her, she says to her, someone in authority, she says, oh, so what was your plan? And she pretty much was like, oh, Jazz, you were my plan. Like, my plan was to let you sort this out. Again... how can anyone think that's a good idea? Like, and at the end she says, oh, well, all this stuff about...
She just got used by lots of people.
I would never... She's too dangerous to use. Every person who used her literally either died or almost died because they trusted her. This is what the book... The story of the book is someone who is a naive idiot who keeps being used by people and keeps being trusted by people, and at every single turn ends up harming those people. And people keep trusting her and people wanting to use her and work with her.
No, but was... kill
because... Sure, don't give it away. You know, you're spoiling stuff. I never said... That's never been what I've said. Don't give away who killed. What I'm saying is...
But
literally, every single person she works with either dies or almost dies because of her actions.
No, but that's his... He... put this all into the rolling.
Yes.
And then he gets killed because
how?
Of it. Had nothing to do...
No.
She was...
How... Why would somebody who is made out to be that clever and that rich and so amazing ever look at this character and think, yes, this is the person I'm going to trust? Of course, it turns out badly for him, but how did anybody in this book ever look at Jazz Bashir and think anything other than this person is dangerous and... irresponsible and naive and easily manipulated and easily used? There is nothing in this book which ever makes me believe that she is actually a genius, that her plans are ever good, that anybody should ever trust her at all. What does she ever do to get to appropriately gain anybody's trust and let anybody think that anything she's going to do is going to be a good idea ever? Literally name one thing that she does ever in this book which either turns out well or is a good idea or doesn't cause harm and damage to anyone in the book.
Yeah, but that the point about this book is that it concentrates on this one thing.
No. Everything in her backstory is a disaster. It's all bad. Everything that she touches in the past has been bad. With the stuff with her father, with the stuff with her relationships.
But at that point...
The book begins with her failing a test. The book begins with her failing a test, with not looking after her equipment properly, and it continues on from there.
But
the only thing she ever does is become a minor team member in a fire operation.
But the story with her father comes down that she is like, you know, it's like the typical teenager thing.
Yes, and she doesn't grow. By the end of the book, she is still an idiot, irresponsible teenager at that level. The irresponsibility she has with that backstory with her father, and that gets her estranged from her father, and that she wants the money to make up for it and stuff. She never gets beyond that situation of, like, I'm going to properly think through all of the consequences of my actions and decide, is this a good idea or not? She actually does make this decision at one point and says, no, this is a bad idea. And then someone says, 1,000,000 slugs. And she's like, deal. Like, that's the... Like, she could be better.
But you need to question, what is the driving force behind
she
her winning?
She is a dangerous, naive, easily manipulated idiot. Mm. That is her character. And again, a better writer would have somebody else within the book notice that and acknowledge that, and there'd be a consequence of that. And that's that again. This is my main thing about the book.
I think the one person who does see a little bit of that is the sheriff kind of guy.
Yeah, the sheriff guy. Yes, he does see it. And he's always, every single time he meets her, is like, okay, I know that you're a bad guy. I know that you're an idiot. I know that you're dangerous. But at this moment, my hands are tied for various reasons.
Yeah.
So there is that one character. But in the book, he just becomes like a figure of fun and a sex object for her to lust over, but then kind of be
what?
Like, She's always horny for this guy. She's constant.
No.
She is literally saying, oh, I see his muscles. Oh, I wonder what his arms would be like around about me. Oh, she's literally lusting after the sheriff guy. It's in the book. It's right there in the book. She is horny for that guy.
Sure.
Yes.
Why not? Why can't a woman not be horny about somebody?
But He's the enemy.
Fucking hell. This is why I like this so much, because
it's fine.
Why can't just the
it's
woman?
It's fine.
Like, you know how many books I've read where the guy was it, constantly thinking, yeah. Oh, sex, sex.
Yes, I understand.
Sex.
Again, I
woman.
Like
the, let's use
I
the
like
woman.
The
let's
sex
use the woman
okay.
for an object.
Okay, I just want to quickly, before we go on for more than an hour, narrated by Rosario Dawson, who is... Claire... Is it Claire Templeton in the Avengers... Not the Avengers, the... Revenge? No, not the Avengers. The
what?
Defenders. She's
oh,
she's in
yeah,
Daredevil.
She's the nurse,
she's the nurse in Daredevil.
Some, she's just
Claire
she's
Temple.
The nurse.
Anyway, so she does the audiobook narration.
Oh,
she
nice.
it doesn't say read by Rosario Dawson or narrated by Rosario Dawson. It said performed by Rosario, and they've got an actor in, and she really wants to show off her acting.
Yeah,
and yeah, it's good actually, because again, a lot of this is like a lot of it comes down to the delivery. And I think if I was reading it on the page, I would have taken different readings from some of those. But again,
yeah.
I can often like disconnect what the person is saying,
yeah.
and then take my own reading of that. Okay, some of her accents are really good. There's this one character, the barman, you know, in the barman,
yeah,
or something like that.
The bar
is it. I couldn't work out.
Bob Billy? No.
Yeah,
Bob Billy
or something. I couldn't work out if he was Cockney or Scottish. Now, those are two very different things, but she doesn't...
Don't think you were Scottish.
There's lots of Scottish... I mean, I should play you parts of this audio.
Okay. We're in the book.
It's some awful, awful English/Scottish accent going on there. And there's a few other accents where I was like, meh, not quite hitting it there. But overall, it's fine. You know, the good part of it is that each character does have a distinct voice, and she pulls it off well. And
yeah.
It was a fun narration because it was a performed narration.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You get these by when they get these actors in to do an audiobook narration. They're like, oh, okay, right. So this character, and I do this, and it's really
yeah.
big, and then take it on small, and then big. And it's just like, and
yeah.
normally the narrators who are like professional, like full-time audiobook
just
narrators, they know what to do to get a book through in a good performance, but kind of like a neutral enough performance that the writing comes through, that the acting and performance
yeah.
doesn't overwhelm
yeah.
the writing.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's good one.
I think this is a little bit like when you have musical movies and
yeah.
you have just yeah. actors, or you have actually professional musical singers
yeah.
who actually
yeah. yeah, the singers are just effortlessly make an amazing song, and
yeah.
the actors really work at the music and
yeah.
put in a lot of
yes. Or
yeah.
I need to talk to you about one movie after the podcast.
Oh, okay,
it has
okay.
nothing to do with this. So,
okay. Right, let's wrap this one up then. Anything
and
else
I
you
think,
want to say?
I think reading it actually,
oh.
I think especially in this book, is a very distinct, different experience.
Yeah.
Because as when I read it, I'm kind of like sometimes not really skimming,
yeah.
but like if there are certain scenes in my head that are clear, I'm not reading every single word. And
yeah.
I think if you have an audiobook, you just hear more.
Yeah.
That you can't not hear.
Yeah, yeah, I get you. I get you about that.
So
I actually made a note. I was just looking through my notes. Pop culture references, kind of a minimum, not very many pop culture references.
Oh,
there was
one that Star I was
Trek,
wondering to,
there was one
to
Star
ask
Trek
you.
Reference. Another thing that I don't understand is a reference to The Good, the Bad and the Ugly. Does a 26 year old moon girl
yeah.
in, I say moon girl, you know, like
yes.
someone who was 6 year old when she moved to the moon
yeah.
and grew up there, would she know The Good, the Bad and the Ugly? Now,
no.
I know this is weird. I literally
so.
Yesterday or 2 days ago, after listening to this, I listened to a podcast and somewhere said, it's some guy who has got like a 10-year-old son and saying, yeah, my son is going through a cowboy stage and he wants to watch, you know, Western stuff. And so I showed him some classics. I showed him Good, the Bad and the Ugly and, you know, whatever these are, Luke, Cool Hand Luke and
happen,
this kind of stuff like that.
But
I understand a 10-year-old boy living in Texas going, oh, let's watch some Westerns, and his father saying, all right, let's go to some classics, Good, the Bad and the Ugly.
Yeah.
But would that happen to someone who moved to the moon from Saudi Arabia when she was 6 year old, would The Good, Bad, the Ugly be the popular culture reference? What's your...
I have another sentence that didn't quite fit.
Yeah.
It'll be guarded better than Fort Knox.
I know Fort Knox is a general statement. Fort Knox is known as the best guarded place in America, but it
yeah,
is a very American reference.
Yes, exactly. It's a very
yeah.
American reference by a Saudi Arabian person living on the moon.
Yes, it doesn't completely make sense.
I'm not...
But however, in, say, the movie, the Mission Impossible movie, like in the first movie, there is that scene where he says, oh yeah, I've got this helicopter, I could fly this helicopter in and out of Fort Knox and they wouldn't even see me coming. And that's to set up the end, that he actually flies the helicopter down the Channel Tunnel, chasing a train down the... Have you seen the we saw that first one,
yeah,
didn't we?
We watched all...
Yeah, yeah, we did. We even talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah.
Where he does fly a helicopter into a tunnel, and him saying, oh, I could fly it in and out of Fort Knox, is the whole point of Mission Impossible, is like, we're going to break into somewhere,
yeah,
which
is... But it is very obvious that this is what they are
it's
doing.
It's an American thing, yeah.
And I don't think it would... Yes. Like, if there are people living on the moon, yeah. I don't think this would be the
but,
thing.
But anyway, let's watch the new Star Wars movie, and we can have another conversation about that.
Oh, okay.
I know it's weird for me to say that. No spoilers at all, but there's a few lines in the site. Just saying, there is one line in there where they say, "Oh, it's,
no,
it's,
I don't even want to hear that.
Okay.
I just want to watch it tomorrow."
Okay, you'll pick up on some of the ways.
I'm sure
the way that you're going. They don't have them in the Star Trek universe. Anyway, so
okay.
Yes, one of my things is when I was saying about like guessing what some of the twists and turns are, I actually said a lot happened on one day. Is her valve part of the plot? Is a broken valve on a spaceship part of the plot too?
Spacesuit.
On her spacesuit, yeah. She has a spacesuit and a valve break. This is like scene
one.
You know, chapter one, scene one, line one. Oh, yeah. The shit, the valve is broken and stuff. But then on that same day, like four other life-changing things happen, like massive news events if they would normally happen. Like some, you know, there's a fire here and another thing there and another meeting there and all these different kind of things happen. And I knew all of those things would be connected, but it actually got to the point where I was like, was that broken valve someone thinking she's going to be trouble for us in the future? So what we've got to do,
we've got to sabotage
the glass factory. We've got to close this other thing down. We've got to make a move over there. We've got to shift this money around. We've got to get this person up from Portugal or wherever he came from, like that. And also take out this one person because she is trouble. And
Brazil, wasn't it?
Yeah, Brazil or whatever. Yeah, Portuguese. Yeah, there was some Portuguese. There was a few people from Portugal and some people from Brazil. Anyway, my point being that, like, did somebody at the start of this book think, is Jazz the most dangerous person here? Do we need to take her out because she's going to be too much trouble in the future?
Now I think you put way too much on her. She's not a main person like you think that.
I'm just saying she has enemies at the start of this book. And if someone is wanting to take over an underworld operation and do that kind of stuff, she was part of she was like the main smuggler. It's revealed later on that she provides all of the black market goods that arrive on the moon. She's the one who controls the supply of drugs and cigarettes and all this other contraband. Yeah, but that's the point. But if you were some Brazilian mafia wanting to help take over something, wouldn't you want to take out the competition at the start? Do you understand what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying. Was her almost dying part of the story? It wasn't.
I actually think at that point, you keep mentioning that she overestimates herself. And I think is part of that.
You think that's me thinking that I'm overestimating her importance before the book starts.
I totally think so.
Anyway, that's it. We've talked for an hour about Artemis. I hope we
didn't spoil too much.
No, I think it's good. I might go back and bleep out the person who you say dies because that's not really fair. I tried really hard not to give away what happens.
You mentioned him.
Okay, let's stop talking about it because we know who it is now. Okay, maybe I'll have to edit that out. Anyway, I'll maybe bleep that over. Let's see. All right, cool. Thanks a lot for listening.
What about the rating?
Rating. Okay, what are you going to rate this book?
Four
stars.
Yeah.
I was going to give it like 3 and 3 stars. So let's give it
three.
So I was going to say 3.5, 3 stars or something like that. Again, because I do have some major problems with it, but overall it was quite enjoyable.
It was a fun read.
Okay, let's give it 3.75. Let's average it out. Is that good?
Yeah.
Because I do think it's a book which is fun. It's worth reading. No, I don't think anybody is going to have any big enough problems with this book. It's totally inoffensive enough.
Yes.
That if you enjoyed The Martian, you're probably going to enjoy this book. If The Martian was too technical and too dry, like, not dry, because it's a funny book, but if that was too heavily involved in technical stuff and air supplies and all this other kind of stuff, this is a bit less. There's other things going on with the story.
A little bit better balance between...
Yeah, there is characters, there is story, there is more interaction, there's more plotting,
more action,
there's more stuff. It isn't
more condensed.
It isn't just Robinson Crusoe, it isn't just just like, this person's stuck on a desert island. How does he get off? Go. It is more like, okay, here's a situation. There's lots of people. There's lots of moving parts. How are they all going to come together? So yeah, there is more stuff going on than this book. However, I think the Martian audiobook was one of our few five-star books that we both thoroughly enjoyed. Yeah. And it was part of listening together on a car journey here. I was just listening by myself while juggling and doing other stuff on the cruise ship and training in the gym and things. So it was a bit of a different experience. And I don't know. Again, the strengths of The Martian are there, but by trying out some other stuff, it falls down a bit. Anyway, Julianne is yawning. I'm now actually on a different time zone than Julianne, so I'm actually fine at the moment. But I'm going to have to try and get to bed soon, though, and get my body clock 4 hours back again or whatever needs to happen. Yeah. Right, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge. Julianne is on Twitter as well, at J-U-K-U Berlin. Yuku Berlin. Julianne Kunstendorf Berlin is what it stands for.
Yeah.
J-U-K-U Berlin. On Instagram as well. Goodreads. Become our friends on Goodreads. Oh, yeah, that's what I normally do as well. What do people think? What do my friends on Goodreads think?
Actually, the rating...
Yeah, is 3.71. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
And among friends is 3.6. Yeah, so averaging out, Jenny gives it 2 stars. Michael... 4 stars, Lindsay 4 stars, Guillermo 2 stars. Yeah, lots of... Oh, I accidentally clicked on the link. Lots of 2 stars and 4 stars. I don't see any 5 stars among friends here. Yeah. Oh, it's quite funny, actually. It's like 2 stars, 4 stars, 4 stars, 2 stars, 2 stars, 4 stars. Yeah, there is a 3 stars there. Who gave it 1? Julie Davis gave it 1 star. This is a huge disappointment. As Andy Weir's The Martian was a real favourite of mine. Yeah, it's... unfortunately, it's something across between a young adult book and an engineering manual featuring aluminium manufacturing. If this sounds like an awkward mixture, it is because it is. Yeah, I think that's one of the main reasons why there's no sex in the book is because it definitely wants to be a book which someone can give it to, like, say, like a 13 to 15-year-old kid, and it'd be fine for that.
Sure.
And if there were sex scenes in it, that wouldn't work. But like to say, here's an indestructible condom is kind of a fun thing to read about when you're 14, whereas actually
such
like a moon gravity,
stupid idea.
A moon gravity,
and then actually the apparatus that comes along with it.
Yeah, so like here's a cleaning apparatus for this indestructible condom, and it's a reusable thing. Yeah, it is a comedy. I understood what they were going for with this. I was like,
it was funny.
I actually thought this is never going to be used as a sex scene, but it was never used to like stop a gas leak.
We talked about it. We wanted to wrap it up.
Oh yeah. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.